Blog Talk Radio.
What up? Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we journey through the past before we stop here in the present on our way into the future. I'm your host, Ascari Donso, and today we're going to be tackling the issue, once again, is integration racist? We're going to do a part two to the show. I got a guest calling today, my man Lil Man, great friend of mine, powerful brother. We're going to tackle the subject and mix it up and see what we come up with for y'all with that, with the answer to that question. It's customary I do a dedication before we start the show. I want to give a shout out to my man, the great ancestor, Shaka Sankofa. Shaka Sankofa was a political prisoner. He was a youngster. He got locked up for murder and rape down in Texas. But while in prison, you know, he wrote books. He started Pan-African classes. He became an international figure while on death row and got international support for his cause for freedom and to be taken off death row because of the circumstances of his case. And yet the state of Texas still killed him and executed him. So, you know, for those who may not be familiar, check him out. Shaka Sankofa, Google him, man. Very important brother, man. Lost comrade. So, yeah, today's topic, man, is integration racist. You know what I'm saying? Last week we tackled that a little bit. We talked about the difference between integration and desegregation. Today, when my man Lil Man called in, we're going to show enough, mix it up, and try to figure out exactly what conclusions we can come up with. And by the way, is my man Lil Man there? Lil Man, is you on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. My man, okay. So, peace, bro. I could, for those who don't know, my man Lil Man, if you could tell people a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to disclose, and then we'll mix it up with a few questions, man.
Okay, currently I'm incarcerated, you know, at Buckingham, and I met DP when I first arrived on this camp, and I joined the Rastafarian class. I guess you can say it's somewhat a mixture of Pan-African / Rastafarian, where we talk about African consciousness. You know, outside of society, you know, I was a civil engineer at Newport News Shipbuilding, and, you know, I made a wrong decision, which ultimately landed me in prison. But outside of that, in secular society, I had no idea as to what, you know, African consciousness was. And my whole line of thinking was geared towards, you know, being a career seeker and the advancement of just myself. I never had a community-oriented mindset. And I think that's many people, especially African Americans that live within this country, that they don't realize that we are connected to each other. And from the mentality of individualism rather than collectivism. So that's pretty much what I want to, you know, talk about, or at least see in my own life.
Okay, okay. You breaking up a little bit, sound like a little bit from my end. I don't know how we going from the switchboard, but we're going to go with it. I got confirmation from the switchboard. They can hear you. Okay, so, yeah, man, and it's integration racist, man. First of all, you know, I like to distinguish between integration and desegregation. You know what I'm saying? Because oftentimes when we talk about integration, it's automatically assumed that integration is desegregation. Last week I talked a little bit about the difference between the two, desegregation being more of a legal thing, integration being more of a social thing. The question I will pose to you, man, is, first of all, man, do you think integration is the same as just bringing people into a system, or you think it's something a little more than that? How would you define integration?
Well, I mean, in terms of defining, you know, integration, I mean, I think the sole purpose of bringing about the desegregation of schools was so that every ethnic group would have an equal opportunity in terms of education, economics, politics. You know, everybody would have, I guess you could say, full citizenship rights. The problem with that was, that I see, was even though you may integrate schools, you have the advent of private schools being created. And what that does is you have resources or better teachers, you know, that are assigned to, I guess you can say, facilities where African Americans, for example, didn't have the money to send their children to those types of schools. So even though you put a line or parchment on paper, you can say, yes, the schools are not segregated anymore, we have integration all throughout. But when you have a disparity amongst resources, amongst schools and parents of teachers, truly can you say that integration exists? Even in the school curriculum, you know, they teach they do teach some segment of African American history, but if you look at the textbooks, you know, it's more so a truncated version of African American history, whereas you don't really see or understand a full scope of yourself. I would say that the majority of the history books teach more so a Western civilization, you know, point of view, whereas the exclusion of Africans, you know, pretty much starts at, you know, the inception of slavery. You know, nothing is predating in terms of that. So, I mean, in my opinion, you can say that we are, you know, that we live in a post-racial or integrated, you know, society, but statistics show, you know, in terms of African Americans, you know, not graduating at a high rate, you know, in high school. The average African American might be, even though he graduated, he operates on a seventh grade level when it comes to reading, eighth grade level when it comes to math, in comparison to white children that are in the seventh grade, you know, at the age of 13. So I don't see how integration is pretty much, you know, equal in those terms.
Right, so, and that's a great point you made, because I was recently reading an article in the Amsterdam News, I shared this last week, where a student in New Jersey was attempting for Black History Month to do a report, and he wanted to do a report, an elementary school student, on Malcolm X. And the teacher wouldn't allow him to do the report because she said that Malcolm X didn't do it the right way, that he should do the report on Martin Luther King, because Martin Luther King, quote, did it the right way. And this led me to think about, as you say, the curriculum, the biases, how it is that people are perceiving our history. You know, who did it the right way, who did it the wrong way. These are culturally biased perspectives. You know what I'm saying? And so, when you say integration, the question becomes: Are people equally treated? Are people having access to equal opportunity? You know what I'm saying? Are people's cultures being equally respected? Another aspect to this, when you beyond, you know, desegregating schools, is residential segregation, right? America's, you know, as far as residential segregation right now, when you go to most cities, what you see is you see African Americans living in census tracts in different economic levels than you do whites. You know what I'm saying? Could you speak to that a little bit about residential segregation?
Well, I think when you think about the Great Migration, from the, I guess you said, 1920s, 30s, and 40s, where you had this influx of African Americans that went to these metropolitan areas such as Harlem and Philadelphia and Chicago and Oakland and California to get away from Jim Crow South. I think in those areas, you had this influx of African Americans, limited space. And even though you still had Jim Crow, that was active during that particular time, blacks were more so marginalized and confined to limited areas, which is why I think you get this, you know, the high crime rates, you know, when people don't have space to fully express themselves and to see job opportunities, that translates into, you know, violent behavior or criminal acts. And I think you have, like, amongst whites, this anticipatory fear as to if blacks are to move in their neighborhoods or even close to their neighborhoods, that, you know, from a residential standpoint, the economic value of their homes will go down. So if a black person does move anywhere near towards a white community, whites are more apt to, you know, sell their homes and move. And as a result of that, the areas usually, you know, lose its value. And it's easier for blacks to live in those areas, but it's at cheaper rates, and, you know, you don't really have the maintenance that would keep these residential areas up to par, which is how we get there's still this fear or this bias towards fully accepting blacks as citizens. even in terms of residential segregation or integration for that matter. So I think, you know, we can always, you know, come back and say, okay, well, segregation is over with, and, you know, we all can have rights or whatever, but it's more done so on a subtle level. You know, even in politics, you look at the rhetoric that Donald Trump is speaking. You know, if you think about when Barack Obama was campaigning in 2007, if he had said 10 to 15% of what Donald Trump is speaking, his campaign would have been over a long time ago. So
that's right.
There's a different bar for whites than in comparison to African Americans. And I guess you can see it permeates in all aspects of life, whether it's me wanting to move into a particular community, go to a certain school, or pursue a certain job. And, you know, so, and, you know, you can have those that could, that may disagree with that, but as a black African American, you know, it's kind of hard for me to convince a white person who may have a different frame of reference what my position is. And what my experience is. So I think that's the, when you start talking about national dialogue, it's always two opposing groups, you know, trying to show on the American experience, a competing point of view.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. And you know, oftentimes when you think about the history, it's often mistaken that, you know, integration was something that was widely accepted and agreed upon
right.
in black America. When, in all actuality, you know, black America was literally split on the decision of whether or not to integrate right here in Virginia, in Farmville, at Rusa Morton High School. Barbara Johns, when they had to have a vote before the NAACP would actually accept the case in the Brown v. Board of Education case, they had to have a vote to determine how many people, you know, they wanted a majority, how many people would be willing to actually integrate, because prior to that, they was just litigating, attempting to get equal resources for schools. But now the NAACP have made a decision to actually work to use litigation to integrate. And before they made that decision with this particular school, they wanted the school to make a vote and determine how many people. They wanted a majority to agree with the integration cost. And by one vote in the school, 437 people, one vote, they voted to allow the NAACP to litigate for integration. So integration has always been controversial in our community, because there's always been a segment of our community who's felt like we were better off when we were separated, that we had more access to loving teachers and resources stayed in our community. And we understood, you know, our plight coming up with solutions and problems to our plight better than the dominant culture. You know what I'm saying? So your personal experience in the military, man, I know you spent some years in the military. The question I would like to ask you, man, is how did you see integration working in the military? Was there a sort of hidden de facto segregation system within the military?
Well, I think, you know, at that time when I was in the military, you know, I wasn't but like 20, you know, 21 years of age, so I wasn't even conscious of, you know, whether, you know, of race to that degree anyway. You know, my whole premise of being in the military was for financial assistance. So I just viewed it primarily as a job. But as, you know, I kept serving in the military, I began to see the power structure, you know, within the hierarchy containing the rank, whether you were enlisted or if you were an officer. And I quickly noticed that the majority of your officers were white. And they are the ones that are pretty much dictating the rules that you are confined to abide by. You know, even when you swear in, the first thing that you say when you raise your right hand is that I will obey the officers appointed over me. And to me, I noticed that a lot of the sergeants, the E5s, E6s, E7s, were primarily relegated to being laborers, whereas the officers were more considered to be the intellectuals, the thinkers. You know, they would be the ones that would come up with different stratagems of how we would accomplish the mission. So what I saw in terms of white was that they were viewed as, you know, ones who could think. And those that were Hispanics and even poor whites, along with African Americans, would be the ones who would be the mules or the brutes, per se. And I don't mean to be, you know, derogatory in that sense, but, you know, as I was, and it's almost like you get a picture of, like, slavery to some degree in terms of the power structure, you know. But, yes, we do have African-American officers. I want to point that out. But I can almost assure you, if you were to conduct the statistics on how many African-Americans are actually officers and compared to whites, I think, you know, those...
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Okay, call back on the other side, man. We're going to finish this up. I think that's a great point. I think sometimes, often, you know, we just take for granted that in this society, because we throw the term integration around, post-racial around, that, you know, there's equal opportunity, equal access to resources in this society. But, you know, we have to really begin to question that. And we have to really begin to question whether or not this concept of integration as we know it is racially biased. You know what I'm saying? I use the example of the school, but this also happens, you know, with employment. You know what I'm saying? Starbucks did a survey a year ago where they exposed how major CEOs of major corporations, just off knowing that, you know, blacks were responsible for certain resumes, and they would put one resume out there, how the study would go. They would put a resume out there, and they would tell half of the CEOs that, you know, the applicant was black, and they would tell the other half of the CEOs that the applicant was white. And the response was totally different based off the race of the applicant. You know, for the black applicant, they were making statements like, he needs work. I can't believe this guy went to NYU. He's a horrible writer. I would never let this guy work for my company. For the white applicant, the things would be said like, this guy has a great future ahead of him. He has a marvelous potential. Love for this guy to work for my company. You know, and this, you know, was for the same resume. So, again, you know, it's integration races. We got to look at all of these. We got to look at all these areas of society, whether or not African-Americans, blacks, you know what I'm saying, are truly being given equal access and equal opportunity to the same resources, and whether or not there's a cultural bias. And that really is what's at the heart, I think, of whether or not integration can move beyond these racist notions, if you will. And that would be, you know, the acceptance of African culture, the acceptance of African-American culture as being equally as important and valuable as white European culture. And until that is the case, we'll never move beyond racial bias. We'll never get to this post-racial idea, believe that we live in, because a large portion of the racial bias comes from the fact that whites have a belief that their culture is supreme, that they are dominant. And so as long as they believe that their culture is supreme, and as long as they believe that they are dominant, they will not give equal respect to other cultures within this multicultural society. And the problem with that is that they, because of the history, have a lot of power, a lot of ownership of the resources in this country. And so for us to actually have equal opportunity or equal access, we have to be able to persuade the dominant culture, the power structure, to let us in. And so, you know, integration can't work until there's mutual respect. And that just doesn't exist. Little man, you back on the other side, man?
Right.
So let's move this thing forward, man. Let's go to the criminal justice system. Recently, we've seen where in the last 10 years where there's been a prison boom, if you will, in Southwest Virginia. We've seen the construction of Red Onion State Prison, Wallace Ridge State Prison, River North State Prison, Pocahontas, and Green Rock. And at the same time, we watched the state close Brunswick, Southampton, Powhatan, James River. Now, we know that the prisons that they closed, which were in the eastern portion of Virginia, gave employment to primarily African-American officers. Easily 85 to 90% of the staff was black. These people lost their jobs, and this had a major impact on the local economies there, right? So now these same jobs were shifted over to Southwest Virginia, where the employees are just the same, but then a different demographic, 80 to 85% white. So the question I want to ask you is, how does this tie in to the question that we posed today? Is integration racist? Because most people wouldn't see that shift or that transition in jobs as a racial issue. But how do you see that in connection to the question, is integration racist?
I think when I look back at our society as a whole, a capitalistic society, we talked about this in the past, I believe, and I explained to you that, you know, capitalism, what it does is it creates an upsurge of somewhere between 5 to 10% of the population that just basically can't adapt within an ever-changing economic system. What I mean is, when I say create upsells, I'm talking about people just don't make it in capitalism. So when you have this, you know, when you look at history as a whole, the question that the forefathers had, even when they was drafting the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the U.S. Constitution, the problem that always arose was, what do we do with the African American? You know, and I think even to this day, you still have that problem because you have limited resources within a capitalistic society because the top 1% has basically all of the wealth. So to keep, you know, people, especially in certain voting black districts such as the rural areas of Virginia, which are primarily white areas, when politicians say they're going to bring jobs to stimulate the economy, you know, one of the ways is by, you know, closing down prisons and building prisons in those areas, you know, to accommodate poor whites who may not have those jobs. So, you know, you have competing interests. You have blacks who need jobs, white who needs jobs. So the battle now becomes, okay, with limited resources, who gets the resources? But we can say that Africans, you have African Americans that are CEOs just as well as you have whites that are CEOs. So I mean, that's, you know, that's that's always gonna be an ongoing problem, you know. But when I look at integration, I look at something that's primarily used to pacify people to the extent of saying that, you know, you have equal opportunity just like anybody, you know. And I think that's somewhat far fetched because we all know that if you can network, you know. Or who you know, whether it's nepotism or somebody you went to school with or whatever, you know, we see that in sports industry. You got coaches who do horrible jobs and they get another job as soon as they're fired, you know, whether it's at the collegiate level or the professional level. So, you know, the way I look at it is now I always be a good, you know, good old boy system, you know. So I think integration is just more so a term that is used to pacify the mindsets of people, you know.
So moving into solutions, because, moving into solutions, you know, people oftentimes ask, you know, what can we do? What can we do now that we understand that, you know, integration isn't for us, integration hasn't worked in the way that we would like for it to work? The question becomes solutions. And this is where we oftentimes get hung up because the solution, in my opinion, is not popular or not popular to say because the image of someone who embraces Afrocentricity or black consciousness is oftentimes one where, you know, they're portrayed as a racist. They're portrayed as having, you know, they're anti-American, you know. We could sit around all day and talk about the great achievements of European ancestors. The moment we begin to talk about the achievements of African ancestors, American African ancestors in the struggle, we're being racist. So the question of solutions, how do we get to a place where the dominant culture is respecting all of the other groups that are living within the society? I begin, I think, with first and foremost making it mandatory that that the dominant culture be exposed to, you know, in the schools, a curriculum that educates them thoroughly of the other different cultures in their society. Hispanic culture, Asian culture, most definitely the African culture, and the various other cultures in the society. People have to be exposed to that, and they have to be exposed to the nuances and the truth about the history, the ancestry of these people. That's number one. Number two, there has to be a moral, and we can dig into, you know, the education, but there has to be, and that's very important, but there also has to be a moral shift in the dominant culture where they're willing to see human beings as equal, and not see themselves as being, you know, the dominant, conquering group in our society and throughout the world who are entitled to the resources of the planet. You know what I mean? This has to take place, and we begin that struggle, man, by communicating and creating institutions. You know, educational institutions, spiritual institutions, places of in-gathering where people can begin to interact and get to see each other as human beings and not as races or other different ethnic groups. But I do think that we as African American people need time to heal. I think we really haven't fully healed from you know, the savagery and brutality of slavery. I think that psychologically and spiritually we're still damaged. And I think that what you see in our communities is the result of that. You know, when you think about the self-hate and the impact self-hate has on our relationships, the gender warfare, you know, black men not respecting black women, black men not respecting themselves, black women, you know, not respecting black men, black women not respecting themselves, and who suffers is the children. So many African-American women raising children are single mothers. Black men are mass incarcerated, unemployed, uneducated. 50% of black men don't graduate from high school throughout the country. These are serious issues that I think are the result of our experience with slavery. And I think that until we, you know, slavery lasted nearly 300 years, the institution itself nearly 300 years. That cannot happen. You know, all of the brutalities, all of the savageries, you know, cannot, abuses cannot happen. And not leave a permanent defect on the psyche of a people. You know, we talk about, often talk about the Holocaust, but this was something that lasted, what, maybe 7 years, 6-7 years. We're talking about 300 years of an institution. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about being conditioned in a way, you know, that's anti-human, that reduces you to being less than human, and you can't think that. And then 100 years of Jim Crow after that, being segregated and still second class, treated like a second class citizen. You cannot think these things can happen, and then there's no psychological consequence. We have 90 seconds left. So before we go, I just want to say thanks to all who listen. Shout out to all political prisoners, free all political prisoners. Keep banging on mass incarceration out there. Holler at Ms. K, all the people in Virginia, RIHD, Google at RIHD, resource information, help for the disadvantaged, Code of Virginia Prisoners for Racial Justice, help the brothers out with the clemency campaign, go to Virginia's for Better Nutrition, help the brothers out trying to, in the process, meet poison epidemic in the prisons. And lastly, man, you know, the first step forward to changing your life is going back to the past. To all my people out there, love yourself, learn your history, learn your culture. And we can move forward. Nakupenda, your whole rule. I'm out, man.
Peace out.